Alright, so we are on the page that says Yud Zion at the top. And we had learned Tess, which is the in the upper portion, which said, does anyone have it? Kishayesh Lelovet. The Eino Rotze Lifroa. Let's see. You've got the other sheet here. You want this one right now. That if a borrower has the money to pay back, but he doesn't want to, based in Kofin Umakin Oso Agitate Saint Afsho. So the basin is able to hit him until he dies, until his soul leaves him, literally. The Kadesha Yifra, so that he will pay back. Go for it. The Kadesha Yifra, so that he will pay back. That was what we had already learned last time. And what it means is that this person is going to have Makas Mardus, which is a rabbinically ordered type of lashing. If you take a look at the bottom, letter Chaf Beis, Sivka and Chaf Beis. So he tells you that this is found in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Zadi Zayin, Tet Zayin, fine. And he says, with that, Kedin Kol Mitzvah Saseh, Ukumoshikasa Biksuvistav Pevavam et Aleph. He says, that's like what we do for any Mitzvah Saseh, anytime a person has a commandment that he's refusing to fulfill. He's capable and he refuses. And the basis for that is the Gemara in Source Gimel. It's a Gemara in Ksuvos. Amar le Rav Kahana le Rav Papa. Rav Kahana said to Rav Papa, "Ledidach to Amar Piyas Baal Chov Mitzvah." According to you, you say that paying back a creditor is a mitzvah. Amar lo nechali diyabin mitzvah. My, what if somebody says, "I don't want to do a mitzvah"? So Amar le, to which you reply, "Tanina." We've already learned the answer to that. Bamed dvar ma'murim, meaning diloke. When do we say that someone gets lashes, regular lashes, a 39? B'mitzvahs lo sasei, if you're dealing with a prohibition. Avol b'mitzvahs asei, but if you're dealing with a commandment. Kigon sh'omrim lo asei sukkah ve'no osa. They say to him, make a sukkah. And he refuses. Lulav, make a lulav, set up a lulav. Ve'no osa, he doesn't do it. Then makin oso agitate nafsho. Then you hit him. Literally, it says here, until his life departs. Now, I should note, not everyone agrees. There is a view in the Rishonim that Achitate Zei Nafsho is not literal. But what they're saying here is that this person, by refusing to do his mitzvah, is engaged in an act of rebellion against God. And therefore, you're going to do this until you get him to agree. Now, again, as I said last week, this is not something that just anybody is able to do. This is a Beis Din type of a thing. Beis Din has to evaluate, is this a good idea? And as the Chazon Ish wrote, as others wrote, in a day when God is not obvious to people, and the value of Torah and the legitimacy of religion itself is not obvious to people, it's a stretch to say that hitting somebody is going to get you anywhere. If anything, it'll drive people away.
Well, so, is it the last in a series of the best announcement? Has the other tale?
Yes, correct. So this isn't something you're ever going to see in practice. But the point is that at every moment, this person is in violation. The footnote then refers you to the Minchas Chinuch. It says Minchas Chinuch Mitzvah Reish Mem Ches. That's a typo. It should be Reish Chav Ches. No, it's in the Pesach Hoshen. The Tama, there he expressed shock. We are 8 lines up from the bottom. The 7 lines up from the bottom. The Tepuk Le Tekofen Mishum Lo Sa'ashok. He says, why don't we say that you compel him because of Lo Sa'ashok? And what are we talking about there? Take a look in the side sheet at Source Dalet. He says, the Tamu Alima Ode, Divrei Hashas Biksuvos, the Menchas Chinuch writes, I am very surprised at the Gemara in Ksuvos, which says you're going to compel him to fulfill the mitzvah of paying back. Diminei didei bevadai kofin to overalosa say. He says we should be forcing him not because of the active mitzvah of pay back a creditor, but because of the prohibition which we saw a couple of weeks ago of Lo Sa'ashok, which prohibits me from holding somebody else's money illegally. That's the issue. And that's stronger because it's a losase, it's a prohibition. So he says, ubilav, if you're dealing with a prohibition, bivadai kofin yoser me'ase. We should be forcing him more than we do for a mitzvah sase. Kimavur barishonim uvacharonim. And he says, I'll prove it to you. Dibase ain tzarech levaz veiz yoser mechomesh. V'alaveros halav kol hono yitenim lo b'pikuach nefesh. He says, look, when it comes to how much I have to spend in order to fulfill a mitzvah, when you're dealing with a mitzvah, as I say, with an active mitzvah, so you have to pay up to a fifth of what you have. When you're dealing with a prohibition, you have to give everything you have, you know, barring what you need in order to live. So, for example, if a person has non-kosher food, and he needs to get kosher food, it's going to be expensive. We tell him, well, you're not allowed to eat non-kosher food. There's a prohibition against it, and we're going to make you spend everything you have to avoid eating it. So if we require you to spend more to avoid violating a prohibition than to fulfill a mitzvah asay, then also the imperative for the Beis Din to force someone should be greater for a prohibition than with a mitzvah sase. Im kein kan kafinin shelo lav or alo sase. We should compel him not to violate a prohibition. That's his argument, and he continues. One second, just finish the source and then challenge it. Ube'emes heyichida halav b'shev ve'altase pilpulu ha'achronim ichayo levazveis kol mamono. He says, the truth of the matter is, this isn't your normal prohibition. A normal prohibition is violated via action. Right? Normally, if something's prohibited, let's say eating treif, there's an action involved in eating treif. Here, there's no action. It's failure to act. It's failure to pay back. The money's already in his possession. It came into his possession legitimately. So, therefore, you could point out, and some do, that maybe one isn't obligated to spend all of his money in order to avoid violating such a prohibition where there's no action involved. However, it still is definitely going to be more serious than a mitzvah sasei. There's no way around the fact that this is going to be more serious than an active commandment, this lo sasei. And therefore he says, I don't understand why it is that you need to tell me we're going to compel him because of his asei. You should compel him because of his lo sasei. Yes.
Well, he's commenting on the right?
There's a mitzvah lo sase, lo sase. Right, we talked about there is a lo sase of lo sashok. This is true.
I just find comparing it to a monetary justification is very weak.
Because I'll repeat it. Don't worry.
It just doesn't flow.
Why? I mean, he's using it only as a way to show that we take X more seriously than Y. You know, if you can show that shouldn't be, that doesn't prove anything. If you can show that there's some reason why we would treat money differently from compulsion, then fine. Byron is suggesting that maybe the standard that the Pesach Choshen is using, the Mechas Chinuch is using, saying that since we make you pay more to fulfill a lo sase than to fulfill an ase, therefore we should also compel the person more to fulfill a lo sase than an ase. So Byron is saying that you can't translate from one to the other, but I'm not sure why. I'm not sure on what basis.
So
you have to get your hands. It is the fact that the laws say you have to spend all your money that makes it more than an assay.
Well, not that it makes it more, but it demonstrates that it's more. I mean, we have plenty of basis for saying that a lo sase is more serious than an ase. If a person violates a lo sase, they have to bring a karban, right? If the person misses a...
That's more of justification.
Okay.
I'd say that's just good. Comparing to the monetary fine.
Well, if you want, I could argue against the karban as proof. I could argue that the purpose of a karban is atonement. And that maybe an ase is more serious, and that's reflected in the fact that the Torah doesn't give you a means of atonement. So you could argue that that's not proof. I think psychologically, we view a los sase as more important than an ase, in the sense that breaking someone's instruction is more serious than failing to do something for them. I think there's something instinctive about that. There's also the fact that a biblical los ase is punished with lashes. Biblical ase is not.
Not doing ase.
Not failure to do an ase, that's correct. Although, now we're seeing this idea of kofid on mitzvah ase, so I shouldn't say that. There is.
Yeah, but it's in a comparison from this point of view. Because the los ase has a punishment. The ase is not a punishment.
Right, so Dan points out something very important. This is a quirky case. Normally, when you deal with a los ase, it's once and done for that particular los ase. So in other words, someone eats something non-kosher, they're going to get punished for it. There is no such thing as compel him until whatever, because either he did it or he didn't do it. This is a los ase, which is ongoing. By failing to pay back, I am in violation at every moment, and that's why you can have this idea of kofin at all.
If you decide to give him after the first
time. Yeah, that's correct. And the whole thing is very odd, and I think part of another aspect of it that makes it odd is the fact that this idea of based in compelling him is really a rabbinic idea. You don't have psukim. You don't have biblical verses for this idea of kofin oso achitese nafsho, force him until his life departs from him. That's a rabbinic idea in the first place. It's called makas mardus. So I think any time you hit a rabbinic institution, you have to recognize that they may have an internal logic for what they're doing, which isn't going to match the outside cases that you bring as proof, such as the example of how much I have to pay for one versus how much I have to pay for the other. But the Mechas Chinuch's question stands. The Mechas Chinuch does not answer it, and the Pesach Oshin doesn't answer it. He moves on to something else instead. Which we all do. The six lines up from the bottom, towards the beginning of the line, V'nechleku. V'nechleku ha-beis Yosef v'harama im yachol l'chavsho b'beis ha-asurim. The Shulchan Aruch and the Rama debate whether you are able to actually lock the guy up in jail. V'zehu kavanas harama b'mesha Yosef al-dibri ha-mechaber, and that was the intent of the Rama when he added on to the mechaber in that discussion. I'm not going into that. Avo kishe ein lo ein kofen oso klok Moshe is bar lahalan. He says, if a guy doesn't have the means to pay back, there's nothing to force him to do. We're not going to do anything to him. And something that we've already discussed earlier, we don't tell him you have to borrow in order to pay somebody back. We discussed actually a different case. We discussed whether you have to borrow money in order to be able to lend to people. What he's saying now is you don't have to borrow in order to be able to pay them back. The kasav b'kesef hakadashim sham. The kesef hakadashim is found on the margin of the standard Shulchan Aruch. So he writes there, shehu adin shebezdin noksin lifroa bizmano. V'ainu shelo yakev ha'peiraon. He says not only would bezdin compel somebody who's refusing to pay, but also someone who's refusing to pay on time. He says, I'm going to pay. I'm just going to pay a week later. So Basin will also compel paying on time, even though he intends to pay back later. However, the Kesef HaKadoshim says that's only if the opportunity cost involved is worth a pruta. It has to be where, you know, by delaying payment, the creditor is losing something of substance. If so, then we're going to compel him to pay on time. If there's no loss, then not.
How could there not be? Opportunity.
As opportunity cost. So that depends on the amount of money involved and what the environment is.
Isn't there always an opportunity cost if you don't give somebody money? There's always something they could have done with it.
Well, the question is, would they have done well? In other words, we have no guarantees. How do you value?
If you say there are no guarantees, then there's no situation where they could have done.
Right, so I think as a general rule...
Or they have to come with a specific proposal that they were going to use the money for.
I think as a general rule, we aren't even going to go based on that, as much as using the standard we discussed a week or two ago, in which we ask the following question. In the event that I had borrowed money from somebody for 30 days, how much would I pay to instead of it after 10 years? Bless you. So the same type of question is what will be asked here. Well, how much would I pay? Let's pretend I, the creditor, really was owed the money a week from now instead of today. How much would I pay in order to be able to get the money today? That's how we'll define opportunity cost. I think that's how we would do it. Not sure of that. Okay. Going back to the top of the page in letter tests, we said, Umikol makom, still, Asur amal velasas din la'atzmo, despite all these powers that the court has in order to collect, nonetheless, the creditor is not allowed to do this for himself. He can't say, well, since we have all this power to compel payment, take it into my own hands. V'ligbos chovo shalo b'ritzono v'yidiyaso shal halove, to collect the debt without, number one, the will, and number two, the knowledge of the borrower. Right? Those are two separate points. Right? He might say, I'm going to just go into this property and take it. He won't mind. That's violating doing it without his knowledge. Or with his knowledge, and he's protesting, so I'm doing it against his will. Both of those are prohibited. So that brings us to note Chav Gimel. I think it's either or. I think the Vav in Vidyato is an or. I see no reason to assume that it's both. In other words, if I do it shelo b'ritzono, but he knows that I'm okay. I don't think so. So take a look, please, on the sheets. I gave you a few sources that you need in order for this for the following piece to be clear. Source A, two psukim in the Torah, one from Parshas Mishpatim, and then the other one from Sefer Devarim. The first one, Im chavol tachbol samas re'echa, arbo hashemesh tishivenu lo. If you take somebody's clothing as collateral, then you have to return it by sunset. The assumption is he needs it, or sunrise, depending on what type of garb it is. But if he needs it, you have to give it back to him. Second pasuk, ki sashav re'acha mashas me'uma. When somebody owes you money, you have a claim for something on somebody else. Lo savo al beiso la'avot avoto. Do not come to his house, meaning do not enter his house. It's talking about. It's not just about passing in front of the house, but do not enter his house to take the avot. The avot is the item from which you would collect payments. So don't go into his house to take it. Those are two separate psukim. So the Gemara comments on that in source Vav. Who wants to know why I have two different psukim? One pasuk saying, give it back to him when he needs it. The other pasuk saying, don't enter his house. So the Gemara in source Vav says, Im chavol tachbol samas re'echa, if you take his clothing, b'shaliach based in akasa v'daber. This is an instruction to the court's agent. When the court assigns somebody to collect an item for a debt, we're talking to him and saying, you know, Mr. Agent of the Court, you're obligated to give it back when this guy needs it. How do I know that? Why assume it's talking about the agent of the Beis Din? Maybe it's talking about the creditor himself. Maybe agents of Beis Din are not bound by this rule. After all, they're not personally involved. Maybe it's only if the creditor took it. No, because I have the other pasuk, the second pasuk. Kishu omer lo savo al beiso la'avot avoto, hari bal chov amor. When the pasuk says, don't enter his house to take it, that's talking about the Baal Chov. I added the stuff in brackets, meaning v'asu alachbol bechlal. The creditor has no ability to take it. Hamani mekayim im chavol tachbol samas v'yacha. Then who am I talking to when I say, if you take his clothing, you have to give it back when he needs it? Must be the shaliach based in a kasam medaber, right? It has to be so. Has to be referring to the agent of the court. That's the Gemara in Bava Metzia. No, because neither case here is volunteer. Im chavol tachbol samas v'yacha means you took, not he gave. Then it wouldn't be Kabbalah. I believe not. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. So the...
Civil war, you have to give back things that were you consumed. So I think pots and pans, well, it probably comes from Israel,
yeah.
But pots and pans are there.
Yes.
Why do you say the difference between the first one and the second one? The Yunishi on a daily basis has to be concerned. But the other thing, the thing that you're probably going to get value from is this, which sacred things aren't durable.
Well, the second line says don't take anything at all. It says, don't go into his house. So that's talking to the Baal Chov. The Baal Chov can't go in the house at all. The Shaliach based in, the court agent, can go into the house, but he's going to have to return it as needed. So, in the back of a standard issue Gemara, you find the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, who is the Rebbe of the Rebbe of the Rambam, went through the Gemara and excerpted those sections that he felt were halacha, so that you could learn the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi's work, and you could have a quick guide to halacha. In Bava Metzia, on the side of the page they have printed the commentary of the Nimuke Yosef. So Nimuke Yosef writes the following in Sur Zion.
Is that a commentary on the Rif?
Correct. The In Tomar, he says, you might ask, Vakaimolan, Resh Parak Hamenia Chasakad, we learn in the Gemara in Bavakama, the Avid Inish Dino Lenafshe, that one is able to get justice on his own. There is such a concept as you could go into somebody else's property and collect payment. So he says, Tirtzu b'shem Rabbeinu Tamzal, they answered, in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, Tehainu b'chlishal atzmo. Right? Again, our question is, you're telling me I can't go into this guy's property, but I have a principle of avid dinish din lenafshe. You could be a vigilante. You could go take for yourself. If your cause is just, you can do what you need to do. So how do I reconcile a pasuk that says you can't and a principle in the Gemara that says you can? How does the Gemara license you to do something that the pasuk says you may not do? So our first answer is that what you're licensed to do in the Gemara is where you have property that somebody else has taken. If you own, fill in the blank, whatever it is, you have a digital audio recorder, and somebody took it from you, then Avid Inish Dino Lenafshe, you are allowed to go into his property and take back your digital audio recorder. But not that you can take items for payment of a debt. That's the first answer. Inami, alternatively, Kishaba Betaras Givya. Aval Hachamari Shaba Betaras Mashkon Lemamashkain. Or Lemam. The Mamshachan, the Mamushkan, I don't know. Alternatively, he says that there are two different types of collection. One type of collection is where you go to claim payment of your debt. The other is where you go to take a mashkon, a collateral, something you're going to hold on to until he pays you. And so, when the Torah says that you're not allowed to go into his house, that's talking about where you're going to take actual payment. He owes me $1,000, I'm going to find $1,000 worth of property, and I'm going to take it, and then it will be mine. And that's where the Torah says, don't you dare, you can't walk into his property. As opposed to where you're just going to go take a collateral, and your plan is to return it once he pays you. And there, Avid Inish Dino Lenafshe, you are allowed to take for yourself. So Nimuke Yosef is suggesting two different explanations for the line between acceptable and unacceptable vigilante justice. His first explanation is, vigilante justice is okay where it's yours, not where you are seeking to take something of his. That's one. I could never go into his property to take something that isn't already mine. That's one approach. The other approach is to say, I can go in and take something that I plan on returning. I'm just going to hold it until he pays me. I can't go in and take something for good and say, okay, this is now going to be payment of the debt. Those are the two approaches of Nimuke Yosef. So now we get to Source Ches, which is the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch writes, Im balim mashkino shalom bishas halva aso. If you want to come take a collateral, and it it's not at the time of the beginning of the loan, when the loan is being originated. The loan was originated a month ago, 2 months ago, whatever it was. And later on, I want to go to him and collect a collateral. Lo yimashkinenu hu ba'atzmo. I cannot go in myself in order to take it. Shem mishkinenu hu ba'atzmo over belav, because then I would be in violation of a prohibition.
Regardless of whether or not the debt is fallen
in. Let's assume the debt is fallen in. But even take that case. So the Shulchan Aruch is siding with which view in the Nimukei Yosef? He's siding with the first view in the Nimukei Yosef. Right? The view that says that the only thing I can go into someone's property and take is something that already was mine. Correct. It contradicts the second view. It's only going with the first view of the Nimukei Yosef. So that if somebody owes me money, I am not allowed to go in and take something, even if I'm just taking it temporarily as collateral. That's the Shulchan Aruch. So you see how the Shulchan Aruch is building. You have a pasuk, you have a gemara that explains the pasuk and says, you, as the creditor, cannot go into this guy's property. You have a challenge because I have another gemara that seems to say, yes, you may go into someone's property and do whatever you need to do. And then you have a resolution, which the Shulchan Aruch sides with, which says, you're right. When the Torah says don't go in, that's talking about collecting payment of a debt. When you are allowed to go in, that's where it's your property that somebody else is holding on to. Those are the two different fields, and the Shulchan Aruch codifies that as law. Which brings us to source tests. And we move now into the 19th century. The Ketzos HaChoshen, a classic commentary on the financial law part of the Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, says in source tests, Mihu, however, Hecha denokta leguvaina, where you took it as payment. Okay, where you took the item as payment. Nira deleka isur. It appears there is no prohibition involved. Ukemavur b'shulchan aruch v'kachasa b'nimuke Yosef. Amnam lefiani yizdaiti lo yacholti lahavin dehechi shayach taras givia below bezdin. Uman shomle v'akar v'chein v'alu l'mashkon v'tzarech iyun. He says, I don't understand what I'm talking about. He says, That doesn't work. He says, the way that if I'm understanding the Ketzos HaChoshen correctly, he is suggesting that where you take it for collateral, that's where you're not allowed to go in. It's sort of the opposite. When you take it as collateral, you're not allowed to go in. When you're taking it for payment, you are. You haven't violated a prohibition. That seems to be what he is saying. And he even sees that in the Nimukei Yosef, although I thought the Nimukei Yosef was saying the opposite. But that's what the Ketzos says the Nimukei Yosef is saying. And then he says, I don't understand. How are you going to take something as payment on a practical level? How are you going to take something as payment? In order to take something as payment, you need someone to appraise it. Right? I'm going to walk into Dan's property and say, Dan owes me $1,000. I think this is worth $1,000. I'm going to play the prices right. Right? I'm going to walk into his house and say, how much would you pay for this? And I'm going to decide that this is $1,000 worth, and I'm going to walk home with it. Without a basement? No, because collateral doesn't need to be proportional. That's the magic of collateral. We're not talking about whether collateral is worth the same amount as the debt necessarily. It could be worth less, it could be worth more. Yeah, it does not necessarily have to be the same. Because you've got no guarantee you're going to pay. Right, the collateral does not need to be of the same level as the debt. So the Ketzos HaChoshen is stuck. He says, I can't imagine how you can go into someone else's property to take payment. Who licensed you to make such an evaluation? If you take a look back in the Pesachei Choshen now, you see that he quotes this. We're at letter Chav Gimel at the bottom of the page. Ayin Shulchan Aruch Simen Tzadi Zayin, which was what we saw in Source Ches. Ube Shulchan Aruch Harav of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first one, Hilchos Halvas, Siv Zayin, Siv Yudalit. Ube Ketzos HaChoshen, Siv Katan Beis, what we saw in Source Ches. Mash Moshe Mutter Lispos Legovaina. It sounds like you are allowed to collect it if it is for the sake of payment. Ela Shehuk Shalom, but he had a problem with that. Mibnei Shetzerach Shuma, because then you have to evaluate it. So you do a mutter. The implication is, if that's your only objection, so if it's something that has a known value, you would be allowed to do it. It's something that everybody knows the value for. It's you grab a container of milk, and everybody knows what milk goes for at the store. A gallon of gas, the same price at every gas station in town, which 5 years after moving here I still don't get. So if you have that kind of an object, then the objection of the Ksaros HaChoshen falls apart. If your only objection is the technical one of who says it's worth what you say it's worth, there are situations where you can get around that.
I find this very difficult, because in simple cases you have to sell the item, pay off the person, never know the value of an item.
It's important to remember you didn't have fluctuation at the same level in the days of the Gemara because you had a much more socialized economy of fixed prices. You had fixed prices. So that becomes less of an issue. It's still interesting, but yeah. So he concludes the thought by saying, "Va'ayi b'shulchan aruch simin dalid. See the shulchan aruch. U'bachronim sham demash mashabechov halva asur lispos. Va'over mishum lo savo al beso." He says that where there is a debt that comes from a loan, as opposed to a debt that comes from, let's say, you incurred some kind of a fine or something like that. But a debt that's from a loan, you are not allowed to take the item, and you'd be in violation of los avol beso. Now the truth is, there it's talking about mashkon. It's not talking about collecting it for payment. But in any case, that's his closing line. There's more to say about this topic in particular because I don't understand how he's reading the Nimuka Yosef. I thought the Nimuka Yosef said just the opposite in the name of Rabbeinu Tam. But you see the fundamental problem, and that's really what I wanted us to come out with today. The question of where is the line between the protection afforded by the Psukim, don't go into his house, and then the principle that vigilante justice may be acceptable in certain circumstances. Is the line to be drawn where he's holding something that actually is mine? Is the line meant to be drawn at where you're trying to do something permanent, taking something that you're going to take as payment versus the collateral? Where is the line between acceptable intervention and unacceptable intervention? That's the fundamental question, which I think from an ethical perspective is very worth examining. Right? Is it the two options that the Imuka Yosef presents are very interesting options. One, really limiting it to where he is every moment violating by holding a physical object of yours, which won't apply to money, because money is fungible. It's not my coin. It's simply an amount that he owes me. Whereas with an object, he's actually holding something of mine. That gives me a very narrow license. It's not my cash. Even if it's the exact same set of coins that I lent it to him to spend. The principle is no valotza nitna, and therefore I don't own those coins. I own a magic, abstract value, so I can't say those coins are mine. Right. Okay. New thought. Top of the page that starts Yud Ches. So you want the second sheet now. Okay. Sif Yud. This is the issue of opportunity cost. But whereas we only dealt with it tangentially until now, now we're going to deal with it substantively. Avar ve'ikev mamon chaveiro. A person illegally held somebody else's property. Okay? He had the money, he could have paid back, and he did it. Even though he caused the creditor to be unable to profit via his money, ain lo alav ela taromes. The only thing that the creditor can claim is taromes. Taromes means I am angry at you. That's what taromes means. That's it. There's nothing actionable. You cannot take him to Beis Din and say, you owe me a certain amount that was my opportunity cost. There's no such thing. The only thing you can do is say, that wasn't nice. That's the principle. Ubechov halva'a asur liftsoso alkach mishum isaribis. And then he adds a note, which you have to think about a little bit. He says, if you are dealing with a debt that was incurred via a loan, so let's say the guy says, I want to pay you the opportunity cost. You're right, I owed you $1 million, and I paid you back a week late. So let me pay you a week's worth of holding $1 million. Whatever that's worth, you know. Let's say it's worth $1,000, so here's $1,000. Can't do it. Why not? Ribbis, that's interest. The very definition of interest is agar natarle, payment for the right to hold your money. So if I'm going to pay you for the fact that I held your money longer, I am paying you interest. You follow?
Yeah. No, I'm just going back to the reference before about the payment. We said that even if it was
we said it's actionable and based in. The we talked about whether you can take the person to Beis Din for a lost opportunity cost. That was the issue before, right? It was if it was worth a pruta. Because there what you're talking about was a few lines up from the bottom on page Yud Zayin. The Kasef HaKadoshim's line, you see that? If you want to start from the beginning of it, it's four lines up from the bottom of the end of the line. The Kasef HaKadoshim Sham, Shehu Adin Shebeis Din Nogsin Lefroa Bizmano, that Beis Din will force somebody to pay on time, V'hainu Shelo Ya'akev HaPeiro'o, not to delay, even though the guy intends to pay just late, but that's only if the opportunity cost is worth the pruta. But what is going to happen to the guy? No, but what is Beis Din doing? Not making him pay for the time. They're going to force him, use whatever means Beis Din has at their disposal to get him to pay on time. That's not ribbis. That's not interest. So the case over there was Beis Din is going to say, there's a substantive opportunity cost, we're going to make you pay on time. We're not going to demand of you that you actually pay that value, because that will be ribbis. That's the idea. So having said that, take a look back on page Yud Ches again, at Se'if Katan Chavdal, at the bottom of, on the bottom part of the page now. He says, "Kemosha Kasev Yerushalmi Perak Eze Huneshech." It's the Yerushalmi in Bava Mitzia, which says, "Hamevato Kiso Shel Chavero Ein Lo Alav Ela Taromes." One who is Mevatel Kiso Shel Chavero. Okay, meaning he makes somebody else's wallet be batel, be inactive. He renders someone's wallet inactive by holding the money. So the guy only has taromes. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. So if you take a look at the side sheet, the last source Yud, he says, "Tani, we learned." What happens if, this is the Yerushalmi that he's quoting, what happens if I give somebody money and I say to him, I want you to invest this money. I am the investing partner, you're the managing partner. I give you the money and I say, I want you to use the money to buy fruit, to buy produce, and we'll split the profits. Right? I am the investing partner, you're the managing partner. I gave him the money, I say to him, go do. And what happens at the end of the period of time? He says, sorry, there are no profits, there's no loss either, I didn't invest it. Here's your money back. So can I say, but I didn't want to get my money back, I wanted to get profits. Do I have any recourse? The answer is no. The only thing you have is that you can complain and say that wasn't nice.
Then we're talking about one to a, in second terms, contract.
Yes.
But isn't there a duty, a duty between individuals to honor their work?
Yes, but it's not actionable. There's nothing you can claim from him for failing to do so. It's between him and God.
Between them.
there's nothing for you to do. You're right.
Isn't it then on the if you promise someone?
Yeah, but what's he going to pay? What amount of money are you going to claim? We're stuck. The only thing that you could ever claim would be
an apology.
But hypothetically, you would say, well, there's the opportunity cost for the money, but then that's going to turn into ribbis.
Right.
He held my money, now he's paying me for holding my money. And Amar Rabbi Yitzchak,
the profit would be the same idea.
Yes.
As opportunity.
Yeah, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
Amar Rabbi Yitzchak says Rabbi Yitzchak, Hada Amra, Hamabatel Kis Chavero, Ein Lo Ala Vela Theromis. So Rabbi Yitzchak concludes the thought in the Gemara by saying, yeah, all you have is a claim of, hey, that wasn't nice. That's all you can contend. So take a look now, back in the Pesach Choshen, please, in Chavei. This will be the last thought for the night. Chavei, you see that? Bris Yehuda, see the Bris Yehuda, which is his work on Ribbis, Perek Beis. Shenira shebechov halva asur lekulei alma. It appears that if you have a debt that was incurred via a borrowing of money, as opposed to other ways that one incurs a debt, which we've talked about, so then everybody agrees that it's asur. V'ayin shum kama pratim b'din mevatal kisur shechavera. We see the Bris Yehuda where I talk about issues of opportunity cost. Over chav hevesi midibrei aposkim v'yishlidon bismanein. He says, well, in Perek Chaf there in Bris Yehuda, I talk about the views of various contemporary authorities as to whether nowadays we should say Be'eretz Yisrael Biridas Erech HaKesef Kedin Nifchas HaMatbeya Shechayov Midino L'Shalim K'matbeya Hayotze. He says there is a separate concept which may mandate payment. There is a principle which says as follows. If I borrow from you $1,000, and then the dollar tanks, so you say, great, here you go, here's $1,000 back, and now it's worthless, then there is a possibility that he's going to have to make up for, the borrower is going to have to make up for the difference in the value of the coin. So he says, in today's inflationary society, maybe the argument could be made that we should view it as being like Nivchas HaMatbeya. V'hainu, he continues to say, She'efshar she'yesh l'chaybo could be Erech HaMatbeya she'helvahu. It could be that it's relevant to require that he pay according to the coin that was lent. V'alkein, yesh li zayir b'yoser l'froa b'zmano. So he says, because there's this doubt, because we have this doubt, where maybe I should pay more, because of inflation. But if I pay more because of inflation, then I may be violating ribbis. So what do I do, right? I'm between a rock and a hard place here. So how am I supposed to take care of it? So he says, the answer is, be really careful if throw a bismano to pay on time. Shalo yavo mimanafshach, only de savek isur ribbis or savek isur gezel. So that you won't end up with a situation in which either you're guilty of paying interest, or you're guilty of stealing for not having paid. So he says, just make sure you pay on time and you won't get into trouble. That's the solution.
Well, no, money in the same realm.
Money in the same realm.
In other words, if I borrow a check from a guy in Canada, and I go to Israel and come back 2 weeks later, and I have a paying back check, and obviously it's changed.
Well, you're dealing with, deal with it in the same country. Deal with it in the same country. I take out a long-term loan. I take out a loan.
$100 a day.
I want to keep this as simple as possible. I'm not looking to make things difficult.
Yeah, but that's what people usually do. They borrow four.
Don't forget that, though.
No, but that's inflation. You borrow money in states, what, $9 and a half a time.
Right. But there is a standard called Nifchas HaMatbeya, and that's the question. I mean, take the following case. Let's pretend for a moment I took out a 5-year mortgage with Canadian dollars a year and a half ago, when the Canadian dollar was trading at $1.04 American. right? And today it's at 90 cents.
Right.
So will you view that as nichlas hamat beya? When I pay you back with my Canadian dollars, it's actually worth much less. And therefore I should have to make up the difference. Who cares about things I'm buying? I only care about the purchasing power of the money.
Purchasing power of the money is the same. Excluding what you import.
Not if I want to go to Buffalo.
Excluding what you
import. It's not simple and straightforward.
What about the flip side? If the value goes the same, if the value goes up, what do you do with the excess value?
If the value goes up, then you know.
You borrow a dollar and you pay.
So are you guilty of paying Ribis by giving him back what he lent you? That's what you're asking.
More.
Right, so are you guilty of Ribis?
Yeah.
Another reason to just pay back on time and be done with it. No, because the concern is, for our case, is specifically where you pay back late. And the issue of opportunity costs. But yes, hypothetically, yes, you're correct.
Right, so that's why I don't understand this success in the Boomerang, because we have a topic that we know, and the Boomerang is paying time. I mean, differently. It's paying time, the time, and then you pay. And not only that, since when we go to Boomerang, because we don't understand the balance.
Two steps. First of all, it's not lachumra. We've spent a lot of weeks on the fact that you have an obligation to pay on time and maybe violating four different isura by paying late. So it's not a chumra to pay on time. But that's number one. But number two, we do that all the time, telling people to go strictly about something because we don't know the halacha. We do that every day. All sorts of issues come up where the halacha is not clear cut, and we say to stay on the safe side. It's not just that. There are key. I made this point in the. You were in the Avodah Zarah Shir the Shabbos.
Yeah.
You were there. I made this point. We were talking about the bracha on sushi.
Oh yeah.
It is possible to stump the halachic system. It is possible to come up with a case in which the proper halachic calculation can lead to a vague answer. Like the case that we were talking about, the bracha on sushi. There are multiple legitimate halachic answers to that question.
So that's a legitimate
to go to Chumrah. So it's legitimate to say, so I'll go to Chumrah. Absolutely.